Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There have been large anti-Islam, anti-immigrant protests across Germany following the Charlie Hebdo attacks in Paris. There have been counter-protests, of course, that have been much larger. But large crowds, one calling themselves the Patriotic Europeans Against Islamization of the West, has been holding weekly protests calling for an end to immigration. You may have read about the marches in Dresden that drew 25,000 people. In Berlin, Muslim leaders organized a march in solidarity with Paris victims. And there now are chapters setting to open in Norway and Austria. There's a Spanish branch that's apparently in the works. We're going to be talking about all of this hour with a guest who wrote a piece in The New Yorker recently, Germany's Strange New Right Wing Meets Charlie Hebdo. Amy Davidson is our guest, a New Yorker staff writer, a regular comment contributor for the magazine. And Amy writes a web column covering war, sports, and everything in between. Weekly marches began, she writes, in Dresden in October and have grown larger, 25,000 in Dresden a couple weeks ago and a few thousand in Leipzig. And so we're going to be talking about these demonstrations this hour of the program and welcoming your phone calls, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. Hi, Amy. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
And you lived in Germany for a while, didn't you?
I did. I actually lived in Leipzig, so I'm a little familiar with the scene there, but not for a few years,
mm-hmm.
not for several years.
So are these demonstrations somewhat recent? I believe I read in your piece that they started marching in October. Is that right?
Well, that's one of the remarkable and surprising things about the movement known by PEGIDA. That's the acronym for the name you mentioned, the Patriotic Europeans Against the Islamization of the West. And West in the sense of the word sort of implies the Occident rather than just like West Germany or something like that. This group kind of came from nowhere. The founding story of it is that a guy named Lutz Bachmann saw some Kurds fighting with some Islamic extremists who were supporting ISIS and had a revelation about the wars of the Middle East coming to Germany, and put out a call on social media, and a few hundred people gathered in Dresden, and then more the next week and more the next week. It is remarkable that something could just come from really nowhere so quickly. It also has a lot of interesting symbolic importance, and this reminded me of the time I'd spent in Germany, in East Germany, the former East Germany, years ago. The demonstrations began on Monday evenings in Dresden and these other cities. Monday evening was when the East Germans who were protesting the East German regime began their marches, which led to the fall of the wall 25 years ago. So a lot of Germans were struck and, I think, saddened and sometimes upset to see those forms of protests, those symbols that they so valued as part of their national story of overcoming the communism and the East German regime, kind of being grabbed by this anti-immigrant, anti-Islamic movement. Now, one thing that I should mention is that the march that was supposed to be held yesterday, this Monday, in Dresden was canceled at the last minute by the local authorities because of what they said was a terrorist threat.
Oh.
That's caused something of an uproar in Germany because it's been embarrassing to the national government that the state government did this. Even people who are quite anti-Pegida are not comfortable with the idea of a demonstration being canceled. And, of course, it also had the effect of canceling the counter-demonstration.
Right.
So the big question in Germany now is whether, because of this uproar, next week's demonstration and also one on Wednesday in Leipzig is going to be all the bigger and more emotional. And a lot of worries about that.
Right.
A lot of Germans find this slightly mortifying that this movement has managed to spread. And although it started, as I wrote, in a lot of these eastern cities, it's really popped up all over in Germany. There's a Legida in Leipzig. There's a Bagida for Bavarian in centered around Munich. And as you mentioned, in other European countries as well.
Is there and has there long been an anti-immigrant feeling in Germany, an anti-Islamic immigrant feeling particularly?
You know, this is an old story for Germany. Germany's relationship to foreigners, Germany's questions about what it means to be German. This goes back, obviously, you know, for decades, and it's had moments when it's been flashes of debate, flashes of even violence, and this is one of those moments, perhaps. In West Germany, there was, before reunification, there was a moment of sort of really thinking about what it meant that West Germany had brought in a lot of guest workers from Turkey, for example. A lot of those families are now integrated in Germany, have been there for generations, but it's a sort of a recurring debate. What's interesting is that in Dresden, the city that's the center of this particular movement, the Muslim population is estimated at just about 0.1%, so very small. It's not as though there's sort of an overwhelming of the city going on in any sense. So one thing I wrote about is trying to sort out why this moment, why this debate, and pairing it with the questions in France and other countries now about the debate over what it means to be a European, how the sort of sense of alienation by immigrant populations in those countries as well. You know, there seems to be this free-floating kind of anger and hate and discontent that is afoot in Europe, and Pegida is the one expression of it and one that one hopes Germany deals with in some way.
Well, you write about their logo, this stick figure tossing a swastika and emblems of the PKK, ISIS, and the German anti-fascist movement into a garbage can.
Very strange.
Yes.
Very strange. When Pegida's spokesmen come out, they very much talk about how they're not against nice Islamic people. They're not against nice foreigners. That it's just these extremes that they're against. That's their public rhetoric. Privately, there's overlap between the people who show up at their marches and people who have much more extreme positions. It's a strange co-opting of emblems and rhetoric. They're very much about, you know, one of their demands is that, you know, women be treated properly, as they argue they won't be if there are too many Islamic immigrants to Germany. On the other hand, there's some of the local groups have also talked about getting away from ideas of German war guilt. So it's kind of hard sometimes to tell exactly where the lines are and exactly what's disingenuous and what's heartfelt. There's a real mix of people and perhaps of motives at these marches. But yeah, to see a logo that has, you know, a rejection of that and also is pairing a swastika with the PKK logo, which is the Kurdish organization, and pairing the swastika with the anti-fascist logo. It's a confusing moment for Germany, and I think really a slightly hazardous one.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, I'm not sure when this is happening, in February, that Dresden tends to attract neo-Nazis and right-wing nationalists in February for the anniversary of the 1945 Allied firebombing. I would imagine that some in the German government might be worried about that meeting this February.
Absolutely, and I think that one thing that we've seen this week is worry about the worry. Like there's worry that that local authorities will say you can't march, this is too much, and that will then become a rallying point of, you know, what about free speech? What are we becoming? And that it's almost giving an argument to the other side. Interestingly, a member of the Environmental Party in Germany came out and said, well, we've got to make sure that there can be marches, that there's an open space for marches. So it's getting into that area as well. It worries about Germany's own reactions and overreactions to moments like these. One interesting thing that happened in Leipzig was that the Pegida, or Legida as it is there for Leipzig, marchers wanted to have posters showing some of the Charlie Hebdo cartoons and got permission to do that, even, you know, though that they're religiously offensive, and that was sort of also a free speech question that came up. It's a confusing moment, and as we've seen in Europe and in our own country, these confusing moments where people are talking about terrorism and threats are not always the moments when the best decisions are made. I should also mention, I should also say that there's no clear connection yet, but the body of a young Eritrean man was found in Dresden, apparently murdered, and there's a lot of discussion about what could this be connected. It might not be at all. It might in no way be connected, but it's added to the environment of fear there and just questions about where all this could lead.
Well, your article is really good, but this sentence really stands out. A debate that simply involves one side shouting Nazi and the other side ISIS is not going to end well for Germany or for Europe.
You know, this is something really interesting to me because I think that a lot of questions that people had about Pegida is, are they Nazis? Are they related to the Nazis? Are they sort of crypto-Nazis in some way? Now, I should say the Pegida people emphatically say that they aren't. But looking at the question itself, you know, is the problem only if they're, you know, really Nazis, or is it also a problem if they're creating an atmosphere of hatred for Islamic Germans and other German immigrants? Like, does it have to be a particularly German historic form of hate to be alarming for us?
Oh, interesting.
For people there.
Yeah, interesting thought. Do people in Germany have a legitimate fear of what may be active jihadists among the Muslim population in Germany?
You know, again, when we say the Muslim population in Germany, it sort of has an undifferentiated ring to it. Again, a lot of German Muslims have been there for 50 years, or their families have been there for 50 years, since the sort of period after World War II when West Germany had a shortage of workers. At the same time, there has been an increase in people seeking asylum in Germany in some measure because of the civil war in Syria. There are people who've fled that conflict. And one thing Pegida keeps saying, one argument that they keep using is that they're bringing their fight here. Islamic terrorism, Islamist terrorism, it could be a threat anywhere. Is it a particular threat in Germany? Is Germany under siege in some ways? There's no real sign of that at all.
And the Syrian refugees would not likely be terrorists. They're fleeing terrorism in their country.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there are people who, and, you know, we've all seen the pictures from Syria. There's a legitimate reason that people are fleeing there, and there is a real humanitarian crisis that I think a lot of Germans are proud of having done their part to address. I should say, a lot of Germans who think that one of the great things about their country is that it has taken in refugees from a real, you know, really disastrous civil war that's been devastating for children, for families. And so it's not all Pegida. And again, I think that a lot of the reactions I've read in the German press are, you know, just people are embarrassed by Pegida. They don't want it to represent Germany.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you wonder what will happen down the road the next few weeks, because if you watch television news, which I do every night and have almost all my life, every half hour, I don't know how much longer that'll be around, but you look at last night's news and the huge demonstrations in many countries, Pakistan and Yemen and other countries, the tens of thousands of people on the street very upset about the Charlie Hebdo depiction of the Prophet Muhammad, and people yelling on the streets there and yelling on the streets in Germany, and then counter groups. It makes you think that everybody's kind of at war with each other in some ways.
It feels like a moment where there's a lot on the table. And what struck me about Pegida is how what it put forward was snatched up. As far as one can tell, these are some guys in Dresden who put something on Facebook.
Oh my.
And, you know, they tapped into, there are a lot of sort of extremist groups or just other kind of groups in Germany that kind of jumped on that. It's not entirely, you know, grassroots, but there was something about the brand that quickly spread. And it's just a moment that really demands some examination, and not just running away, or not just denial about the idea that there does need to be a real discussion.
Right. And yet, quite the opposite is happening everywhere, right? There's no real deep discussion.
No, I think that some political leaders would like it to go away, which is not necessarily going to help.
Joining us this hour to talk about her latest piece in The New Yorker, Amy Davidson. She's a staff writer for The New Yorker, and as a senior editor for many years, has focused on national security, international reporting, and features. She helped to reconceive NewYorker.com, where she served as the site's executive editor and now edits The Daily Comment. She writes a web column in which she covers, you name it, war, demonstrations, sports, and all other topics, which means everything. Her latest piece is titled Germany's Strange New Right Wing Meets Charlie Hebdo. Our phone number, a couple lines are open. A couple of you have been waiting. We'll be with you momentarily. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, we'll speak with the author of The Beautiful Music All Around Us, presenting the extraordinarily rich backstories of 13 performances captured on Library of Congress field recordings between 1934 and 1942. Let's go to phone calls now, and we start with Saeed in Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Amy, I read the article that you'd written, and this Pegida in some way is actually helping Islamic extremists in framing this conflict as one between the West and Islam, which mm-hmm. if we do that, we have made a fundamental mistake. This is a struggle within Islam, and I'm familiar with it because I've dealt with it for over 40 years since I left Iran. That there is a minority of extremists that have been ruling over and winning the fight against the majority moderates. And here in the United States, we actually commit the opposite mistake as Pegida, in that here any criticism of Islam is labeled Islamophobic and disallowed, so to speak. So for example, Ian Hirsi Ali, who has every credential to talk about the mistreatment of women in Muslim-majority countries, is disinvited from speaking in universities because she's labeled an Islamophobe. The Million Signature Movement, is the most effective and active feminist movement in the Middle East, gets absolutely no support for American feminists for reasons that have to do with political alignment and political agendas within the United States. So both the activities that we see in Pegida, these are the covert racism that is finding a ticket to express itself because of the terrorist activity, and in the United States, this overwhelming desire to be inclusive to the point that we cannot criticize the very repressions of every Western value that occurs in Muslim majority countries. Both these activities accomplish the same end.
Amy.
I feel like here in the U.S. I hear fairly robust discussion about issues with, you know, Islamism and different branches of it and different ways that certainly about the issue of Islam's treatment of women. So I do feel that one perhaps more than you might be suggesting does hear that here. But I would say it is the case with Pegida that they have, while trying to, you know, every now and then they'll say, we don't mean the nice people. They have painted a picture of Islamization that's a very extreme picture and doesn't fit with the daily lives of, you know, the very many Germans who practice the Muslim faith and live there and don't recognize themselves at all in Pegida's propaganda, and nor should they.
Mm-hmm. And it says something about who they are when, as you write, Angela Merkel is regularly mocked at the rallies and referred to as mommy multicultural. What in the world does that mean?
You know, and I don't know if I mentioned it, but the banner sort of is a Photoshop thing showing her with a headscarf, which is... It's what's interesting also is, again, that Angela Merkel is from the former East Germany. You know, again, Pegida didn't really exist, as far as anybody can tell, before last October. Merkel singled it, you know, mentioned it, not by name, but it was clear what group she was talking about in her New Year's speech, and, you know, which she used as occasion to criticize German xenophobia. She's also, though, spoken out in the last couple of days about making sure that, again, that there's space for protests in Germany. But yeah, the rhetoric gets very confused and confusing.
Thanks, Saeed, for your call. Carl in Madison, hi.
Yes, hello. What an interesting discussion. I think that probably much more concerning to me than the fanatics in the Islamic images that we see splashed across the media, as concerning as those are, far more concerning is our overreaction to them based on the fact that we're conflating fanaticism with Islam. We, you know, when the gentleman who shot at Ronald Reagan professed his love for Jodie Foster, we didn't ask what's wrong with Jodie Foster that she brings out such fanaticism. We saw that this extremism, this fundamentalism, was a threat to us in the form of an individual, and it's a threat to us in the form of a group. But as many people are saying around the country, the vast majority of people who follow Muslim practices and espouse and participate in Muslim faith are abhorred by this violence. And it strikes me that democracy here in the United States, we can tolerate so many different viewpoints and so many, and tolerate isn't even the right word, we can celebrate so many different ways of looking at the world. But the one thing democracy cannot support and cannot thrive under is a my way or the highway fanaticism or fundamentalism of any kind, whether it's Christian-based or Muslim-based. And I'm very concerned about the press, and I don't mean Wisconsin Public Radio, but the press in general, making it sound like there's something exotically dangerous about people from the Middle East, or that the religion that many people in the Middle East practice somehow has an inherent evil seed in it. What we're really talking about is people who are using a faith as an excuse to do things that no one in their right mind should tolerate. And that excuse can be found in any religion.
Amy.
I think that can be found in many religions, and it's interesting then to ask why it is being framed this way and how we can also control our other reactions to that. You know, for example, obviously we're, you know, one striking detail about the Pegida marches in Leipzig that I wrote about was that some of the protesters were carrying a sign that said, Pegida is Charlie Hebdo. And the reporters there said that few of the signs there were so upsetting to the counter-demonstrators as that, the idea that something, that a slogan of, you know, I am Charlie Hebdo, that had been sort of meant so inclusively in the days after the horrible attacks on the Charlie Hebdo office in Paris, somehow was being grabbed by a sort of people with a much narrower and angrier agenda. So that's the moment when you confront acts of extremism. Is the response going to be broad and inclusive and bringing people in and figuring out what it means to be French, what it means to be German in a way that doesn't shut people out or label people as dangerous preemptively? Or is it going to be something angry and disdainful? And that, I think, is what, you know, the caller is talking about a little bit. And that is, that's something that at this moment Europe has to deal with. In a way, seeing it in a German context, it's a little bit, you know, it pulls you back a little bit. You remember with Germany where some of these things can lead. And that way, it's also useful to look. The Germans certainly remember that, and it's useful to look at how they've reacted to it.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, let me introduce this. What the world seems to be dealing with at the moment in horrible ways is Islamic fundamentalism. And these are people who are terrorists, but we just spent the last hour talking about the horrors in Nigeria with Boko Haram. We've had, you know, the killings of the school children in Pakistan. We've had what's going on in Syria and Iraq and in so many parts of the world there, all the people who have been demonstrating the last few days as well.
Oh, absolutely.
In the name of whoever their God may be, whoever they see Muhammad as, seems to be their inspiration, whoever they are, for, you know, these terrorist acts. So,
and few people would know that more than some of the Syrian refugees who
right,
are in
right.
Germany now fleeing a civil war. You know, absolutely. There are issues on all sides that need to be worked out and talked about and really addressed. And, you know, some of those are with, you know, the question of Islamism and where that's led. And,
right.
And, you know, why did these two in Paris, these two young men who grew up in France, walked into an office with machine guns and or with AK-47s and killed cartoonists.
Right.
So there's nobody's going to. I don't think it's helpful either to be, you know, self-righteously like, you know, nobody should have any questions about anything, certainly. But there are different ways to raise those questions and to address them, and there are different ways to sort of figure out what your audience is for them.
Right.
Is it everybody who looks different? Is it everybody who was born in a different country? Is it everybody who speaks to God in a certain way? You know, it's just who are you talking to when you're mm-hmm. saying what people have questions to answer.
And maybe,
and that's the hard thing.
Yeah, maybe that's the deep problem here, is that we don't have enough people who can find out why in the world somebody would do that kind of an act, or why they would wipe out a town in northeast Nigeria and kill people randomly, or how anybody, any human being, can do that. And that's the form it's taking right now, not that it's taken, it hasn't taken other forms from other people during different times in our history, but you want it to stop. You want people to have different kinds of lives, you know, so that we're not living in this kind of world. And I don't know what it takes to have that discussion and to make things different. I don't know, Amy. Do you?
I don't know, but I have a good guess that just saying these people are like that and they should all just go away is not the right answer. It's not going to be helpful. And again, you know, there are Germans whose parents and perhaps grandparents were born in Germany at this point, who are Muslims and have every right to be. And, you know, it's just this whole idea that you're addressing these hard questions on this broad community-wide basis is, I think, not ultimately going to be helpful for Germany or for Europe, for France, or for us.
Yeah. Our phone number, thanks, Carl, very much for your call, which prompted a lot of discussion. 800-486-8655 is our number. And Nancy in Menominee Falls is next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm just going to say my first comment is I thank you for Amy for having the courage to face some of these issues. I've been taught as an artist, violence begots violence, but yet sometimes, you know, society is pressing us to the point where we don't know what to do, you know, to solve some of these problems or deal with them. And I also would want to say that, what is your comment when they say that, it's not the government, Obama's, job to clean up these cities and towns. It is their responsibility, and I think that the people are getting pressed too far to the brink, and especially some of the younger children that think violence is the answer to their problems. And how about, is martial law going to be our only answer if we don't get some answers?
I think martial law is probably almost never the answer. Do you mean in the United States? I think that we've got a lot of other options here and a lot of other ways to, are you talking about the United States?
You know, work together without the fear of getting shot, you know, or the fear of getting hurt, you know, to work together to try to solve some of the issues, because there are, you know, as you know, there are a lot of them on the table.
There are, and I think that in the U.S., we've figured out a lot of ways to address these issues, you know, over our history, and we're going to keep doing it. And doing it, I hope, democratically.
Tell me if you get a sense, you lived in Germany and you've written about Germany, but you know about other countries in Europe and this movement is spreading. And I'm just interested in a deeper understanding, Amy, of how other European countries have been dealing with immigration. Obviously, there have been problems that this feeling there are right-wing governments, there are right-wing parties that would like power, and they seem to be gathering support. Is this a growing movement to be concerned about? Can you tell me about the shape that it's taken in France, for instance?
France is really interesting. You know, one of the parties that has gotten stronger and by many assessments has come out more strongly in the crisis following the Charlie Hebdo attack is the National Front, led by Marine Le Pen, which has a quite anti-immigrant reputation and past and perhaps future. There was a moment after the Hebdo attack when the Hollande government called for a national unity rally and pointedly didn't invite Marine Le Pen, although her National Front has done well in elections and is part of, and that, I think, has widely been seen as a mistake on the Hollande government's part. Le Pen quite made a point of being excluded and said, you know, the political establishment doesn't recognize the truth tellers and all of this. And it's in that way, it's also a dangerous moment for France because it might end up really strengthening these sort of nationalist parties that also increase the sense of alienation, and there's sort of a whole cycle there. I think each country has its own particular problems, but France, you know, obviously we're looking at more closely because of these attacks, but also we're looking at more closely because it's where one of these groups, the National Front, has real electoral prospects.
Mm. And what's the attraction? Why would people align themselves with that party? What are they offering?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. I mean, they're offering an idea of France. They're offering an idea. One thing we haven't talked about is they're offering also reservations about the European Union and what that's meant. Europe has changed quite a bit in that respect in the last couple of decades. And it's interesting how ambivalence or really hostility towards the European Union also plays into this in different ways. So this idea, is Europe going to control France? Are immigrants going to take over France? These two sort of, you know, alarmist warnings both kind of play together in different countries in different ways. So there's that too. There's a lot of interesting soul searching going on in Europe, and it just does feel like one of those moments where it can go in a lot of different directions.
So you think that there is a fairly good chance, a good chance, a better than even chance that the Nationalist Party could gain power in France?
I don't know if I would go that far, but they're stronger than they were before. It's interesting that you say that because the final issue of Charlie Hebdo, the magazine, had on its cover a caricature of a novelist whose name I'm going to do a terrible job of pronouncing, Michel Houellebecq, whose novel, which came out the same day as the attack, was imagining a future France in which a Muslim president wins a runoff election against Marine Le Pen, because they're the two finalists, and the idea is that the left is so, and the center are so divided and against each other that it ends up being those two are the only ones left standing, and the Muslim candidate wins. That's the premise of the novel. It's, you know, absurd in its trappings. You know, it's a satirical novel, but people in France it's caused a lot of discussion in France, a lot of controversy.
Amy Davidson is our guest this hour, and we're talking about her piece in The New Yorker, January 14, Germany's Strange New Right Wing Meets Charlie Hebdo, and welcoming phone calls from you, of course. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Amy Davidson is our guest, and we're welcoming phone calls from her very, very thoughtful, thought-provoking article in The New Yorker, Germany's Strange New Right Wing Meets Charlie Hebdo. It's on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and lines are open for you for your response. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Chris in Madison, our next caller. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling because I have some thoughts about how the attack at Charlie Hebdo might be a very good strategy. The ISIS people, or whoever, I'm going to call them ISIS, attack Charlie Hebdo for defaming their sacred symbol, the prophet. The West sees it as an attack on our rights to do and say and mock whomever. But the Muslim countries who don't have a democracy, who haven't separated the secular from the sacred, see all these people marching for the right to mock the prophet as an insult to them, not just to the prophet, and they're offended, and voila, ISIS has a lot of recruitment. And that's all I have to say.
All right. Thanks, Chris, for the call. Amy.
Well, I think that's hardly inevitable. I think that there are ways that countries like the U.S. and France can respond to the Charlie Hebdo attack that make it clear that that's not the message, that that's not where we're headed. Yes, there are ways that it could play in. You know, all terrorists hope that they have some sort of victory, but I don't think it's inevitable. And I think that if we make clear what we're defending when we're, you know, what it means when you say, "I am Charlie," which is the slogan again, you know, what does it really mean to say that? And I think that it's possible to send a message that's much broader and that, you know, it's a real statement of unity rather than of just anger or hatred.
Thanks, Chris, for the call. You talk about some of the talking points of Pegida, asking for a tightening of Germany's asylum and immigration laws, making a point of saying all they're asking for are the same rules that are in effect in Switzerland and in Canada.
Right. You know, they are always like, we just want to be like the Swiss. And the Pegida in Dresden, these talking points were kind of were carefully crafted, but it comes down to when they're on the street and when they're in the crowds, the mood is somewhat different. Obviously, Germany right now has is a pretty welcoming asylum policy. People coming in certain circumstances. And again, a lot of Germans are proud of that. One interesting thing about their demands is that they've talked a lot about excluding criminal refugees and criminal immigrants. It emerged that the founder of Pegida himself had a quite long criminal record.
Yes.
So it's a complicated group with a complicated, well, I don't know if complicated or just sort of slightly contradictory mm-hmm. message. And again, part of the issue with looking at Pegida is sorting out some of the public statements and the passions behind them.
And didn't you find access to the Facebook comments of some of their members too, which were pretty troublesome?
Der Spiegel, the German magazine, looked at the Facebook comments and they found in their ones before they had kind of made some of them private that there were real slurs and ethnically, language about different ethnic groups that was really troubling and unpleasant, and again suggested that that there's a lot that's not pleasant going on here.
Mm-hmm. And what about anti-Semitism? The attacks in Paris were, of course, in a kosher supermarket as well. I have heard from people who are reporting from Europe that there really is a concern about a rise in anti-Semitism. Is that true in Germany?
I think that whenever in Germany you have a sort of a surge in nationalism and a surge in the idea of, like, what it, you know, just Germans, then that does indeed raise questions for Jews living in Germany. Part of it is also, again, this idea that that one of the message of German nationalist groups is that Germany should be done with saying sorry all of the time. So in that way, it's and sorry for what? Obviously for World War II, for the Holocaust. And I think that it's alarming in terms of looking at anti-Semitism around the world when that message is there. Again, that's true whether or not the immediate targets of a group like Pegida are Jewish Germans or Muslim Germans. In France in particular, there does seem to be a real moment that's really troubling for Jews in France, for anybody, of attacks on the kosher grocery store with guards around different Jewish institutions. It's you know, all these decades after the Second World War, it's tragic and troubling and something that France really needs to address.
Mm-hmm. Bonnie is our next caller, Amy from Erin. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I want to give a message of hope to this discussion. This is in regard to the fact that 50 years ago, my husband and I lived in Germany as part of the U.S. Army, At that time, we became very good friends with a German couple. Both my husband and Jack were dentists. Now, Jack is retired. He's 80 years old. They live in a suburb of Munich. About 6 or 7 years ago, the mayor of Munich called Jack. He's quite well known in the area, and asked Jack if he would do something about all the many, many immigrant children that are coming into Germany from all over the world to develop preschool programs. So Jack set about, not knowing that much about it, he did a lot of research, but he set about trying to develop preschools for children aging from 6 months to 6 years. At the present time, there are three sites in the Munich area, and the main goal is to enculturate these children, to teach them German as being the native language or their first language or second language, whichever. And by the time they're finished with the sixth year of age, then they're ready for the primary regular schools, and they're fluent in German. During the time that they're there at this preschool, they have field trips, and they take the children to all the variety of religious places of worship. For example, they have gone to the first synagogue in Munich that was completed just before 2008. They have gone to other houses of worship, Christian houses of worship, to develop tolerance and understanding for each other's beliefs and personhood. There's a waiting list for each of these sites.
Let's get a response.
I would thank you for that story. I think it's true, and we've spoken in so many negative things. I want to just go back to something we talked about at the beginning, that for every one of these Pegida demonstrations, there's been a counter demonstration of Germans saying, you know, we welcome our neighbors. These are our friends and people we work with, and, you know, hands off. And there has been a real message of tolerance and really love on the part of a lot of Germans. This isn't the only voice there. And I think that is something that can be built on. Again, a lot of Germans are proud that they've taken in refugees from civil wars. A lot of Germans, you know, they know who their friends and neighbors are, and they are going to stand up for them.
Thank you, Bonnie, very much for sharing the good news. And let's go to John in Milwaukee, our last caller. Hi, John.
Hi. I just was wondering if the guests or you could say if it was possible that the United States would take the pressure off of these fine old European countries, Italy, Britain, France, Germany, and have their refugees be in, and so on, bring them over to the United States. Like, I think Germany's expecting 200,000 immigrants this year. And if other countries equal another 700,000 or 800,000, then we could accept like 1 million immigrants a year from Europe to take the pressure off of those small, endangered nationalities.
Amy.
Well, you know, without getting into the exact numbers, of course, we're in the middle of our own discussion about immigration.
Right.
And
right.
I think talking about Europe doesn't mean that we're not also going to talk about the U.S. and that we don't also have our own real discussion going on, and that we can't do better. For example, refugees even from Iraq, where people who've worked with the U.S. there, what we could be doing to help the Syrian refugees. All of these are really great questions that we should be talking about. Too doesn't mean that we can't talk about the rest of the world, because we should know what's happening there, and a lot of things are you know, moments of crisis, things become very visible. But of course we should be talking about our own welcome and our own issues as well.
Okay, well, we could just go on for the next 10 years and have all these talks. Amy, thank you so much for a really thought-provoking conversation and for your writing as well. Thanks.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for all the questions.
Yeah, we have a great audience. Amy Davidson, her piece is in The New Yorker. It's titled Germany's Strange New Right Wing Meets Charlie Hebdo. It's in January 14, and we'll have it on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Judith Sears-Poisson for producing this hour, and thanks to K.P. Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. A reminder, the President's 2015 State of the Union Address will be on tonight at 8 o'clock here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and we'll talk about it tomorrow during our 1 o'clock hour of the show. Thanks very much for listening today.